I'm someone who loves trying out different makeup looks, but doesn't really wear much on a daily basis, so I like to focus on making sure I have high quality staples. And whether you like a fresh face, full glam, or somewhere in between, you've probably seen Thrive Cosmetics Viral Tubing Mascara. I've certainly seen it everywhere. You know, the one in the turquoise tube? So that mascara, along with all of Thrive Cosmetics' beauty products, are certified 100% vegan and cruelty-free, which I look for in makeup, and they've got excellent quality to match. And something I didn't know from all the mascara videos I've seen is that for every product sold, Thrive Cosmetics donates either that same product, another product that is needed more, or a monetary donation. They've worked with over 500 nonprofits to help with a wide range of causes like supporting cancer survivors, people experiencing homelessness, education access, and so much more. Knowing that makes me feel even better about using their products. And I do enjoy using them. Like I said, I like having high quality staples, and so my favorites are products that are multi-purpose, like the Brilliant Eye Brightener. It comes in a bunch of colors, and I like using them as eyeliner, eyeshadow, and even highlighter. Thrive Cosmetics is luxury beauty that gives back. Right now, you can get an exclusive 20% off your first order at thrivecosmetics.com/thrive. That's Thrive Cosmetics, CAUSEMETICS, .com/thrive for 20% off your first order.
Hello, I'm Alison Larkin, writer, comedian, narrator, and host of the Jane Austen podcast. Join me as we embark on a journey through Austen's timeless stories, starting with Pride and Prejudice. The Jane Austen podcast with Alison Larkin is available wherever you listen to podcasts.
Welcome back to Angel on Top, a podcast where we watch and discuss every episode of Angel, one by one, spoiler-free, and in tandem with our arch nemesis, those beep over at Buffering the Vampire Slayer. I'm your co-host, LaToya Ferguson, a.k.a. the Cordelia Chase of the Buffering Verse, a.k.a. one half of the Gun Squad, blah! a.k.a. Arby's Crinkle Fry Vodka, a.k.a. Forever Alone, a.k.a. Gwen Raiden's Red Hair Streak. Oh, how I miss it. a.k.a. the co-host doing this recording high on NyQuil. a.k.a. even more annoying new nicknames to come.
And I'm your co-host, Morgan Ludich, a.k.a. the Winifred Burkle of the Buffering Verse, a.k.a. the other half of the Gun Squad. Bacow! Bacow! a.k.a. Arby's Curly Fry Vodka, a.k.a. I love you, LaToya, you're a favorite, kissy kissy, mwah, mwah. a.k.a. Gwen Raiden's White Hair Streak, a.k.a. the co-host who's high on life while recording this dang pod, a.k.a. even more annoying nicknames to come.
And this week, we're watching Angel Season 4, Episode 11, Soulless. Soulless was written by Elizabeth Kraft and Sarah Fain and directed by Sean Astin. It aired on the WB on February 5th, 2003.
And this is the one where the gang, face-to-face with Angelus, biffs it hard. They biff it so hard.
You fucked up. You fucked up. You fucked up.
Fucked up. They fuck up so hard, it's hysterical.
So, we're going to start this episode with something we haven't done in a while, and that's Bye for Boreanaz, because you know who's Bye for Boreanaz? Sean fucking Astin!
Woo!
He's got a booty stare and hot spiky hair. If you're straight or gay, your tingly feelings don't care. You're just being honest about this sexy demonic in your Bye for Boreanaz.
Let me give you some quotes from him directing this episode, shall I?
Yes.
So Astin was is close friends with Doug Petrie and told him that he had like a strong desire to direct episodic television. So in season three, Sean Astin shadowed both David Greenwalt and Tim Minear for several weeks, basically, you know, to see how it's done and also just to get comfortable with the cast to see if they would like even allow him to like direct in season four.
Right.
So he got this episode. And so here's some sort of things he said about it. Mm-hmm. As a director, when you're working with David and he's into Angelus, he's got so many layers and so many different shades and qualities. You want to keep exploring them and mining them and pulling them out. It's such a rich, meaty character for him to do. He's good at it. It's a little creepy. I feel so protective over it. Angelus, man, he's pretty wicked.
Hell yes, King. I don't have a bad thing to say about Angelus. I don't have a bad thing to say about Sean Astin. These are two beautiful boys that I love.
Right?
Yeah.
It's good stuff.
No notes.
Good stuff, baby. But also, previously on Angel. If you kill him, I'm going to lose you. Then Gunn kills Seidel. And now they haven't touched each other since that happened. Then they murdered Seidel together. No, I did. Fred realizes that Wes has been keeping track of her. And she doesn't say fuck off. Whatever. Gunn tells Fred, Wes, you move on, Fred. I'm going to put you down hard. He said this in Spin the Bottle. You might have forgotten that with every other wacky thing that happens in Spin the Bottle, but that happened before they lost their memories. Oh. Beast Rain of Fire leads to the sex that everyone is happy they don't have previously for because they don't want to see it, but poor Angel. The Beast plants the block of the sun, and he does. Beast knows Angelus, but Angel doesn't know the Beast. We need Angelus. We're rousing Angel's soul, baby. Cordy says, Angelus.
And here we are. At the beginning of the episode.
We are.
I have a lot of thoughts. Let's dive right the fuck in.
Just we open, dive in.
You know it feels good when you dive in. Connor, you would have loved Christy Carlson Romano's oeuvre.
That's he has a Christy Carlson Romano poster like in his taxidermy home.
He would. He would actually love CCR, if you will.
No!
So Connor fights a bunch of vampires from Tucson. Tucson, Arizona is, for people who don't know, a small college town in like north of Phoenix where U of A is. I'm from Arizona. And why would you live there as a vampire? It is so hot. It is an area known for its sun.
I mean... As Gio said in season three, why do the vampires always go to the hottest, sunniest climates? It's like, vampires aren't smart.
Not smart. So they're here because there's no sun. They're escaping the hot Tucson sun. And Connor beats the shit out of them and he's like, tourists. And I'm like, bitch, you do not claim Los Angeles. Sir, you are not an Angelino. I am, as someone who's lived here for 10 years.
Yeah.
This is my city, you gangly little bitch. They didn't come to Kortoth. This is not your home.
I do call him gangly later in my notes, of course. But yeah, him making all these quips about, like, out-of-towners. Like, shut up, bitch.
I'm like, bitch, what do you know about Los Angeles? You live in an abandoned warehouse. Have you ever driven a car here? Like, you,
no,
sir?
He's only CGI'd onto a bus.
This man does not understand what it is to live in Los Angeles. Call me when you've been to the Grove, sir. So then, you know, there's a bunch more vampires. Clearly the city's overrun. Little Connor Angel has got his work cut out.
Yeah. The newspaper that he uses a weapon says crime wave shuts down city. That's one way to describe it.
But they're still making the newspaper, which is nice. So at the Hyperion office, we put Angel's soul in a safe behind a painting, which means it's going to be fine and it's never going to leave there, right?
It's not Chekhov's soul jar. It is not David Blaine's soul jar.
This is very worrisome. They're like, did you guys know that Angelus is bad to each other? Wes is trying to warn everybody and is like, he'll try to play on your emotions. And he says, I've spent my whole life training for this and I'm still not ready.
And I'm still a little bitch. Gunn says, I hope we know what we're doing. And I wrote in all caps, y'all do not.
You don't is the thing. And also, but I do love that Wes is like, he's smarter than I am, which is not something you'd think Wes would just like openly say. And I appreciate that he does because, you know,
he still is. doesn't help him.
Yeah, it doesn't help him to know that.
He's very terrible in his first scene with Angelus. He's losing.
he is not good at this. Like, none of them are. Like, that's the thing.
No, Cordelia is the best at it, actually.
Cordelia,
but she has an indecent proposal herself.
Yeah, but I also don't even think that, like, that's not even a good move. Like, I don't think it is. Like, he can't, I don't know, he can't have her. Like, I mean, I guess she can just be like, yeah, we're putting the soul back in, so my deal doesn't matter. But wouldn't he know that? Like, I don't know. I just thought that that was not as baller.
Well, we'll talk more about it when we get there. But yeah, they're like, yeah, so it is pretty funny, I'd say, how Corey has to be the one to carry the weight of how dangerous Angelus is, because she was still pretty tangential in season 2 when it came to that stuff. Yeah, we talked about her car and everything, but, like, really, he wasn't fucking with her.
No, yeah, he really didn't seem to give a shit. He was focused on someone else. We see Angelus singing.
Willow and her fish.
Willow and her fish.
Yeah, but they talk about the killing, the maiming, and the torture. And then Lauren brings up the puppies nailed to walls, which Buffy didn't even want to know about when Giles was telling her. So I guess Cordy found out about it at some point, and she told Lauren. Or yeah. Angel did when one of those times where he's like, I'm telling the story about how evil I was.
Mm-hmm. Or, like, Wes, who's read every single thing about Angel ever, told him. Like, the puppies nailed to walls, I was like, please, we don't talk about this. Shh. We see Angelus singing ominously in his jail cell like a cool guy. We go to titles, we come back, and we have our first Wes and Angel scene. The first thing written in my notes, naturally, in all caps, is that Slayer, she's a pistol with a heart. hey, remember when Angelus and Buffy were fighting each other, and it's like she loved Angel, but like she hated Angelus, and like, but he was like wearing the face of her one true love, and they had to fight. That shit was pretty good, huh?
Yeah.
That was some good shit.
That's kind of what they're talking about here, too.
Yeah, this was not as good. I write Kraft and Fane in big letters. I missed Sean Astin because I was so excited about Kraft and Fane.
You're right.
And then Wes is like fangirling respectfully.
He calls him the legendary Angelus. Boy, you're already like... And also, we should note, when he's singing, like, and they reveal it later, like, he can hear everything they're saying upstairs.
Mm-hmm. Which, like, be further upstairs. Or, like, have some sound going on down there so we can't hear you.
Yeah, like, go to one of the rooms, like, not the office, right above the basement.
They're not very smart. So, Wes asks about the beast, and Angel just, like, negs him and is like, you suck, which, like, fair. Wes loves it because he loves being negged.
Yeah. Angelus asks him, what's the deal with Angel and Raiders of the Lost Ark? Which, of course, was our last episode.
Yeah. Wes learns that, like, the team all together killed the beast in Angel's dream, which Angelus is like, oh, what a little bitch. Like, even in his fantasy, he doesn't get to beat the thing alone. He has to have all of you to help him.
He calls him a candy ass.
He has a lot of, like, new world terms that I would like to talk about that Angelus has added to his vocabulary since being in the early aughts. Mm-hmm. I have much
I
to
also
speak about.
Noted that Angelus is itching for eyeliner. I can tell.
Oh, he wants it so bad, and I wish they'd let him have it.
That's what he should have brought him instead of blood.
They should have. They've been like, well, you can have blood or you can have eyeliner. Your call, man. He'd pick that eyeliner. So Angel's like, oh, this is about Fred, who Wes wants to, quote, bend over the kitchen counter, end quote. No. No. No.
What was that, Morgan?
No. I don't like it. I don't like it. I don't like it at all. He is like, yeah, he knows that Gunn and Fred are... I said, he knows that Gunn and Fred are together, unlike yes. Angel.
I was like, not only does Angelus know that Gunn and Fred are together, it seems Angelus ships Gunn and Fred.
He has intimate memories of hearing them fuck. I'm like, okay, no wonder Angel doesn't like to acknowledge their coupling if he doesn't want to be like, I can hear you guys fucking all the time. Like, I do believe that Angel would be too embarrassed to say, I can hear you guys fucking all the time. But, like, dude, move across the hotel or have them move across the hotel. Like, they would not want you to hear all that.
Maybe if he paid them a living wage, they could move somewhere else.
Yeah, be kind of nice. All this stuff is gross. Like, he's stoking these resentments. He's, like, reminding me of the love triangle, which is the evilest thing of all.
Yeah. I did write, even though I knew it was not going to end well, like, he's forgetting Wes fucks now, so he's not going to be flustered. But he is flustered because
he's a little bitch.
Such a fanboy.
Did Lila teach you nothing? Stop blushing. God, I miss Lila so goddamn much. I haven't seen her in 100 years.
Yeah. This note, I was supposed to say, okay, look, it's crass, but it's more proof Angelus is smarter than Angel, as he knows they're dating.
Yeah, he's more observant, for sure. In the Hyperion office, everybody is watching this conversation. It's deeply uncomfortable. Yeet. Fred is like, we can't believe Angelus. Like, we can't believe the stuff he says. And Gunn's like, what about the stuff he says that's true, though? Fair.
Good point. And then Cordelia makes a good point, too, which is that he lies with the truth.
Mm-hmm. Which is, I think, like, that is a skilled enemy. Someone who can, like, make the truth have, like, a different weight to it. Like, Gunn is pissed, but he's like, I get it. I got it. I'm, you know, trying to keep a lid on it. I am hearing you. Like,
but Fred also needs to use her words and assure him that she actually still loves him, because she hasn't done that.
That is the thing, is I'm just like, the absolute lack of Fred having a perspective in this story at all, or like an inner life, voice, thoughts. It pisses me off so much that we see her kiss Wesley and kiss him back in this episode, and we have had no stories about her actually, like, being like, if I'm being honest, I have feelings for both of them. Like, we've never had anything indicate that other than, like, weird eye emoji shit.
Yeah, when Angelus is making the Othello, like, analogy, and he says, like, but in this case, like, Desdemona was actually in love with the other guy. I'm like, is she?
Is she?
Footage not found.
That's the thing. But, like, also, she kissed him back. So we are to believe there is something there. And, like, and she allowed herself to be kissed, you know.
They have those awkward moments, but it's usually just because, like, she knows he has feelings for her. But we see nothing that says that she has those feelings back.
But, like, now we technically are seeing that, but it's all, but none of it's actually done in any way that feels like anything other than her being, like, tug of war between these two guys. Mm-hmm. It's like Wes is, all we know about her is, like, who's winning. We don't know actually how she feels. And it sucks. It pisses me the fuck off. We go back into the cell. Angel's like, Wes, you're looking in the wrong place, but he won't tell him where to look because it's not sporting. Wes is like, well, aren't you, like, enemies with the Beast? Like, if we defeated him, that would be helpful to you, right? And Angelus reminds him he's a nerd with no leverage. And I wrote, way harsh, Angelus. Angelus watches the fucking Vampire Diaries. He knows about leverage.
He does. What do you think he thinks of Damon Salvatore?
Oh my God. I think he sees a lot of himself, like early days. And he's like, yeah, I mean, we were all like that once, but then we grew out of it. He's like, he sees him as, like, an immortal child, in my opinion.
I think he looks at me and he sees, like, Spike, basically. He's like, oh, God, this little pussy.
That is not my fucking style. Love me, love me. Shut up.
But he loves when stuff becomes Steven.
Yeah, would love Steven. Would love to hang out. So Wes tries to leave, like, he doesn't care. And he's like, whatever, we'll just put your soul back. Like, I don't give a fuck if you can't help us. And Angelus brings up all of this shit that hurts him.
Because Wes tries it. He tries it. It's like, it must hurt you that Angel's a champion. And just is like, hey, anyone ever called you a champion? Fucking loser. Let me tell you the things you did wrong.
Yeah, probably not Lila. Probably not Faith. Probably not Connor, who you fucking stole. And also probably not your own fucking dad who hates you. Jeez. Jesus. Just like pow, 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 pow.
Got his ass.
He got his ass like 4 times. And Wes like limps out of that room barely alive. Angel.
He calls He calls Connor a little twerp, but says he gives him the creeps.
The little twerp really gives me the creeps. I screamed. I was like, this is correct. All of this is good. Then he starts speaking about Cordy. Look, do I like Cordelia's boobs too? Yeah, but I wouldn't say it like that, sir. Rude. He's like, she talks too much. He even does an impression of her.
I love you, but you were so bad. You ate babies. Chicks.
It is. That part is pretty funny, though. Where it's like, oh, I love you, but I can't. Because we've been bitching about that this whole time, too.
I'm like, same here. But yeah, when he's like, when he says chicks, I screamed.
Chicks, man. I guess because he can go further now with like someone he's in love with, because when he was doing this to Buffy, you couldn't, like, she's still like a child. You can't say worse things.
I mean, he could have. He's evil, but I appreciated that they showed some restraint there.
I feel like standards and practices would say no.
That's
what I'm saying.
Oh, yeah, I'm glad. Because truly, there's nothing worse than when he talks to Joyce and says that they had sex. That's one of maybe the worst moments of my life right there. Is me seeing that scene.
I haven't been able to sleep since the night we made love.
I'm just like watching that through my fingers and screaming into a pillow at my desk chair when I was 15.
I just think about like his physical comedy in that scene where he's picking up the groceries and like one just flies away.
Absolutely, like, masterful. Again, this is a podcast about season 2 of Buffy the Vampire Slayer. And we love it. Lauren comforts Cordy. Gunn offers to turn off the video feed. And Fred's like, we all know this is lies. Like, the way everybody jumps in to be like, Cordelia, like, none of us are paying that shit any mind. Fuck it.
And then Angelus goes for the kill.
The words banging, bumping, and grinding. I write gag sounds. He even makes a premature ejaculation joke about Connor. And
only
I'm like,
we're allowed to do that.
I'm like, oh, that's for us. You, sir, are evil. And Fred's like, well, that's crazy. Like, nobody would ever do that. And I write in my notes, poor Fred, she still thinks this show is good and Cordy wouldn't.
She's like, that would be like sleeping with your own. And Lauren's like, no, because he knows it's true.
Lauren's like, shut the fuck up, Fred. And she's like, oh, poor thing. Poor baby.
I want to note something in all of Angelus's things is that basically Angelus starts off this whole thing talking like he and Angel are two separate entities, pretty much. It's like, regarding how Angel doesn't remember, it's like, maybe he doesn't remember the good times. Maybe he won't let himself so like him. It's like, you guys are the same person.
Yeah.
Or are they?
I mean, I don't think they're not talking like they never talk like they're the same guy. So Connor shows up. He's home. He's covered in blood. And everybody's looking
here.
At him. He's here. Everybody looks at him and they're like, fuck. Oh, shit. Angelus wants blood. And Gunn and Fred, bless their hearts, they're like, we're on it. Bye. I'm like, absolutely, get out of this awkward moment. I write a million hearts in my notes. It's the last time. Then, in the basement, we have a Gunn, Fred, and Angel scene. We have the Othello and Desdemona reference.
Yeah, which in this case would make Angelus Iago. But, you know, Iago was lying about all that shit.
This is where I wrote in my notes, can I scream here for just a brief sec? And I have some all caps notes to share. If I have to hear one more fucking thing about this fucking love triangle, then we pan to Amy Acker doing the eye emoji, I will fucking burst into flames. How does she feel about it? How does she feel about it? Please stop telling this story from the perspective of various men who own her and start talking about how she feels navigating this situation at a complicated time in her life when a lot of things are shifting and changing. End of yell. There's more sexualizing Fred. Angelus.
Which again,
being,
only we're allowed to do.
Which only we're allowed to do because we do it respectfully. Angelus is like, calls Wes Gunn's boss. Like, he's very much trying to get under his skin.
It's the easiest way to get under his skin. I mean, like, I know obviously Fred would need someone to go downstairs with her because, like, honestly, it should be like two people each time, not just like Wes, like, going by himself. But, like, Gunn was like the easiest one to, like, rile up. We know this.
Yeah. And Angelus is like, oh, you know, like, I like Angel can hear you guys fucking, and it gets him all horny. Like, I have to go. Like,
he's this, like, is where I said I wish that this was still after Seventh Heaven.
Like, he's truly like, dang, Fred, you're a freak. Like, the shit you're saying. And I'm like, oh my God, Fred's a talker. Gunn, like, he says, oh wow, all this from a guy who can't get any ever. And I'm like, well, that's technically more of a burn on Angel than Angelus, who 1000% fucks.
We all know Angelus fucks.
Like, but still, I drew a little heart next to him because I love my boy. Fred rolls over, like, blood to him on a little cart. And, you know, she tries to stay out of arm's length, but he, like, smacks the tray and it, like, hits her in the face and she ends up splayed on top of it. And he's able to grab her and, like, choke her against the bars. And he's like, well, I might get some now. No, thank you. Commercial back. Gunn runs to her to save her, like, fuck it, he's not gonna just, like, let something awful happen to her. And Wes ends up saving the day by shooting him with a trank gun,
which, thank God for the camera and monitors.
Yeah, good, helpful, smart. Fred and Gunn, they do a little cuddle.
It looks like they'll be fine, whereas you got Wes staring at them like, stop staring at them, you creep.
Yeah, like, stop staring at them while they cuddle. And they, like, hold each other, and she's, like, so scared and, like, feels so bad for messing things up. And he just wants to protect her, and it's nice. And Wes is just, like, looking. And I'm just bummed out. I can feel things coming to a head. I don't like it.
And then the next scene. Shirtless Connor. This is where I write in my notes, but they won't show his gangly body, so what's the point?
I drew a little sad face in my first bullet point just says, shirtless, sad face.
You don't really, like, it's shirtless, but it's like, they go up so high, it's like, this is the WB.
Yeah.
If you're showing a shirtless man, you're doing this with intent, but not here.
Like, in the version of events where he is super hot, like, I do think we also would all understand Cordy's thought process better. Like, yes. We'd be like, dang, like, if he's changing.
Where's Charlie Hunnam?
Yeah, if he's Charlie Hunnam and he's changing and we're like, dang, see why you don't want to get into that? As opposed to, like, the way they don't even want to show him shirtless. Like, it. Because then you're putting all of us in the uncomfortable, like, experience of, like, we're also seeing Angel's child, like, as a sexual being, as opposed to whenever that character is sexualized, I'm like, no, thank you, next, goodbye. If I was like, oh, shit, he is hot, like, then I'd feel gross and complicit in, like, a way that was helpful for the story, as opposed to feeling gross and complicit for watching this as an adult woman and feel like I should be put on a list. It's just rough. So she gives him Angel's shirt and he's like, this is his, isn't it? She's
which he,
like,
should be swimming in.
It is pretty big on him, but it's not big enough on him. She's like, okay, sorry, I could get you one of Lauren's shirts if you want.
Which would have been hilarious. They should have done it.
I would have loved that. So Connor's like, I really want to go fight. Like, everyone's still looking at me. Like, they think I'm connected to the beast.
He's also, like, really fucked up this entire episode. Like, there's a lot. That's how many vampires there are around. Like, that he's that fucked up and not healing quickly.
Yeah.
Although, of course, you know, all short span of time, as we know.
Yeah.
But actually, time is, who even knows at this point, because the sun's out, and at one point it's like, it's apparently daytime.
Yeah, he's bruised up as fuck. Like, he does not look good. And Cordy's like, actually, they're not looking at you because of that. They're looking at you because they know. And he's like, cool, if Angel doesn't care if they know, I don't care. And she's like, it's not Angel.
And then he basically hits her to end the scene with a, you're not my mom. It's like, if you're doing that, that means she's mom-like and you shouldn't have anything to do with her.
I wrote in my notes, don't tell me what to do in all caps, which is what he says to her. And I wrote in my notes, I do agree. Once you fuck the kid, you can no longer be his mom. Like, she kind of like doesn't get to like order him around like he's a child anymore once she had sex with him. Like, it's one or the other, buddy. You kind of can't unring that bell.
We all know it's one or the other.
It's so painful. Then we have this Wes and Fred scene in the office.
So she thanks Wes for helping, and she makes sure that gun's not around because, you know, a thank you is bad. Also, the neck scar is prominent, I gotta say.
Yeah, the neck scar is popping.
He's also looking into the fantasy sword that Angelus mentioned, even though it seems it has nothing to do with anything, right?
Oh, yeah, yeah. He's like, I'll check that out and see if it's anything.
At least, they go to the priestesses, but we don't actually know that the sword is nothing. They just had a different lead, basically.
Yeah. So Fred, like, regarding Wes's feelings, says, it's very sweet, and there's nothing wrong with it. And I'm like, no. Like, right there, let's start here. If, like, if Michael Chasen was talking to a hot lady with a neck scar who had a crush on him and said, it's very sweet and there's nothing wrong with it, I would do exactly what Charles Gunn did.
But no, isn't this also like the Leighton Meester thing where it's like, I would just let her have him?
Yeah, it's like, okay, if it's Leighton Meester, like, then I'm just like, all right, well, I guess I have to leave. Like, I have to pack up and go, you know? Like, if saying to someone who has feelings for you in your workplace, where you also work with your significant other, that their crush on you is very sweet and there's nothing wrong with it, like, that's not that she is welcoming his advance because he then kisses her without asking, but like, she kisses him back. So it's very clear that like, she's kind of opening herself up to this situation.
She's Marissa Coopering.
She is. She's Marissa Coopering hard. She's like betting on losing dogs and like petting the sad boy and being like, oh, I think I'll put you in my sad boy collection. And it's really weird. It just doesn't make any sense. Like, this isn't, these don't seem to be the actions of a character who values and wants to stay in her current relationship, which, if you want to tell that story, if you want to be like, Fred is unsettled with Gunn, she is not like happy, she like is having these growing feelings for Wes, or even just like she is starting to feel like she doesn't want to be in this relationship anymore and is interested in like sabotaging it, you have to show us that, not just like have them constantly being sometimes a little weird around each other, sometimes perfectly normal around each other. Like, you owe it to yourself to do a story about how Fred is actually feeling, where she is the main point of it and her emotional truth is made clear to us. Because if you're not doing that, you're like, well, it doesn't really matter how she feels. It's about which one of them she's smooching right now. That's the only way that shows me that that's all that's valued here. And that's gross to me. Like, I don't care who's currently winning right now. Like, I care about what she's actually feeling. So, and I'm still, like, left to try to have to, like, divine that by a bunch of, like, subtext and weird shit. So she kisses him. He kisses her. She kisses him back. Gunn shows up. They spring apart. And Fred lies, which, I mean, you could say that she's doing that for a number of reasons. She could say that she's not wanting to rock the boat when things are really tense and this isn't like a time that you can talk about this now. But more likely than not, it's because she got caught doing something and she doesn't want him to see this. It's just like
that. She goes straight for the lie. Like, come on, Fred.
And it leaves it up to like multiple interpretations, which I think is like muddy and uninteresting storytelling. Like, I have no problem with like the gray morality of all of this. And like, if this is, you know, like if this is kind of cheating, like that is a story to tell, but you have to actually tell it. Like, they're trying to absolve like Fred of any responsibility in this at all to, like, keep her likable, it feels. And that's shitty. It just makes her a non-person.
And that only vaguely works if they are going the actual Othello route, which I assume that is what the point's been the whole time, where she actually has zero feelings for Wesley.
Which is like,
she pushes him away when he tries to kiss her.
Yeah. And that is not what we see. So it's just weird and it pisses me off and I hate it. And I know we've been saying this over and over again, but I just want to say it again because it's important. Gunn is...
just makes me want to rewatch. Oh!
Gunn doesn't buy this shit. He and Wes is like, hey, you leave Fred out of this. And Gunn is like... You leave Fred out of this.
Also, she's in this.
And she is like, I'm here, actually. And this is so late to be having this conversation.
And, I mean, we have been saying they need to just fucking fight it out, which is true. They do need to fight it out. It shouldn't have happened because of this kiss. It should have just happened already.
Yeah, and it's just like, it's just not a good look on anybody. It is a bad look on everyone. And I understand that, like, maybe you want to tell, like, a darker story, and that is also fine. Like, I love an antihero. I love people who do shitty stuff and do the right things for the wrong reasons and the wrong things for the right reasons and all various things for all various reasons. But you just have to actually tell the story, and you can't hide behind this gross, like, just, like, the way they treat Fred this season grosses me out. Like, that I'm hearing Angel say all of the, like, Angela say all this, like, fucking, like, shit about her and her body and the way she has sex and all of this stuff. And I'm seeing these two guys argue over her, and I am not understanding a single thing about what she is feeling, thinking, wanting at all. And that is ridiculous. It's gross. It's shitty. And it's, like, it's a huge disservice, all from King of Feminism Joss Whedon. I can't believe it. From there, the inventor of feminism himself.
No, that's Rebecca Michelson.
Oh, you're right. Rebecca Michelson did invent feminism on the casket day. I just am pissed.
It sucks, too, because, like, the stuff Gunn's bringing up, it's not even just because of Fred. Like, he's finally addressing, like, the Connor stuff that, like, fucked everything up in the first place.
Yeah, and, like, Gunn is...
Because he was very upset about that, and he didn't even want to believe that Wes did it. Like, he's still upset about that, specifically.
There is still so much on the table, and I think it is so fucking ridiculous for them to be like, obviously, Angelus is going to do emotional warfare on us. What we definitely shouldn't do is try to maybe discuss some of our issues beforehand so that he cannot use these weaknesses against us. What we'd better do is continue to lie to each other and keep things from each other.
And to ourselves.
And to harbor grudges against one another and just hope that Angelus won't notice. Congrats, guys. You did a great job. It just is so annoying. So Gunn is like, I don't like the way you look at my girlfriend. And he also says that when Fred goes to Wes like this, it makes him feel like he's not good enough. Like, he is the only one vocalizing feelings here. As much as I don't like the possessive shit, he is now actually saying how he's feeling, which is more than anyone else is doing. So points to Gunn for that, if nothing else. He's like, stay away from her. Meanwhile, Angelus, in his cell, opens his eyes and is like, wow, that was fast.
Officially proving that he can hear everything.
Great. Then in the office, Gunn says, you take whatever you want, no matter who it belongs to. And that's about Connor, but that's also about this. And Wes is like, I didn't realize Fred came with a deed. So, like, again, putting this in this place where, like, Gunn looks possessive and shitty and, like, he's saying, like,
even
sexist,
though that's clearly
I own
not
her stuff.
The major thing he's upset about. He's upset that Wesley fucked up their whole friendship and everything around them.
That Wesley repeatedly, like, betrayed him and acts, like, righteously and morally superior all the time. Like, that's the thing. It's like, you can't play King Good Guy and be, you know, making out with someone else's girlfriend and be, you know, hanging out with the Wolfram and Hart lady. Like, I get it. but also he's become a different guy now, and they need to have a different relationship now. And no one has addressed this. And if they're supposed to be working on a team together, I'm sorry, but Angel should have fucking done something about this.
I want to go back into the dream.
Don't we all?
Take me back to the Matrix.
Please. The steak tastes just as good. They tell me it tastes good. Wes tells Gunn that, like, he does a bad job and that all he does is throw blame around on people. And I'm like, well, you are to blame for what happened with Connor. Sorry.
You did the thing.
And his big final point is you can't give her what she needs.
And okay, so before that, with the blame thing, Gunn says, you want to say that again? To which, that's where Fred rolls her eyes. Yeah, she does not roll her eyes at that you can't give her what she needs. What the fuck?
And what is it that she needs? Like, it's like some kind of like darkness. And I...
Gunn has darkness, and I'm not making a black joke like this show would.
Yeah, he has like elements of his person, like he's quick to fight. He has a short fuse. Like, those are inherently dark things. Like, he is a fighter and a warrior. Like, that is how he does good. And that comes with, like, negative, like, aspects of it.
So he has, like, bad things from his past that he told Fred about because, like, she's the only person he feels comfortable doing that, whereas Wes isn't telling Fred, like, all the shit he's up to.
Yeah, and I'm just, like, so confused. And also, like, even if we'd had, like, an individual story about Fred dealing with darkness, like, I mean, like, her wanting to kill her professor is obviously that. But, like, since then, now that she has crossed this threshold and is responsible at some level for this guy's death, even though, like, Gunn did it technically, like, I would argue that Fred owns that 50-50 with him. Like, how has that changed her? How has that made her different? And like, how can that bell not be unrung? But nothing. Not a single thing about that for her and how that is affecting her feelings for Gunn or how that is affecting her feelings on anything. Just not there. Just why have it? Why not just have men fight about who gets to kiss her? Very cool. Love it. They fight. And Fred, like, catches a stray elbow. And Gunn is, like, horrified that he has hurt her. And they all just kind of, like, stare at each other. And it's a very ugly moment. And it's a bummer. Connor, meanwhile, has...
During all this, he's skulking to the basement.
Smart boy. So he goes up to Angelus and they're like, oh, like, are you wearing my shirt? And he's like, it looks good on you. And he says, so no, did not. Cordy.
No, she did not. And, like, I hate that more. He's supposed to be like, how are we supposed to like this character when he says shit like that?
I read in my notes in all caps, is everyone just in the mood to make me heave? Like,
Angela's saying this stuff, I get. How are we supposed to feel about Connor? Like, I'm getting, like, emotional whiplash here.
That too. Like, again, like, Connor needs his own stories where we're learning about what he is actually feeling versus, and so, like, what comes out of his mouth is true and what's a defense mechanism. Like, I need to know that. Like, again, if he had an inner life and things like this, other than just being scrappy-doo and saying shit just to say shit, like, it just sucks. Connor's like, Angel warned me about you, and Angelus is like, well, I should be warned about you because you make everyone kill themselves.
Got his ass.
Got his ass, though. It sucks. He's like, yeah, your mom, like, Darla hated the feeling of you squirming around inside her. Holtz fucking shoved a barbecue fork through his neck because of you. Like, all of this shit.
I wrote my notes. He's punking this boy out.
He's truly just, like, destroying. He's dunking on this kid.
Angelus returned as, like, a rap battler.
Watch Connor Angel get bodied.
Angel's got bars.
He absolutely has bars. And he's like, Holtz was a good man. And I write in my notes, but what if I felt that, like, in any way? Like, why is there no Connor story where he's like, oh, you know, here was this thing that Holtz did with me as a kid, and it made me feel normal, even though we lived in hell. And Angel could be like,
even though I don't believe any of that happened. We know he's not a good man. And also, he tries to say my father first before he just says Holtz.
Yeah. And I'm just like, but what if I got to feel that way in any way? Like, that would be interesting. Like, if I also felt that Holtz was like a confusing figure as opposed to just a melty candle. And I just don't care about. But like, it would be nice if like there was like I liked the moments where Angel like thought Holtz was good at the end, like that moment where he's like, well, shit, like you're giving me my son back and like you raised him, like I have to be thankful to you to a certain extent. Like that I'm interested in, that kind of complicated shit, but it's just not there. It's just like full lip service. I write in my notes, Angel loves to say boned. Is he a Sunny character? Like, he's saying banging, he's saying
boned. Boreanaz knew he'd be doing bones after this, is what it is. He's preparing.
This is a little Easter egg for you Boreanaz heads. He even says,
doing your mom and trying to kill your dad. There should be a play.
He's talking about Oedipus Rex.
We've talked about it a couple times on the show as well.
We're cultured.
Yeah, we actually talked about it at the first night of Buffy prom.
We did do that.
Because we're very smart. So it just help. Connor's like, you know, I like Connor's thing where he's like, Angel's just something you're forced to wear. You're my real dad. Like that is a good articulation, I think, of his thoughts and feelings.
But also, that just gives Angelus more ammo. I'm like, Angelus fucking loves this shit.
Yeah, he's just having the best time fucking with this kid.
He calls himself daddy.
Oh, yeah, he does. And Angelus is like, I fucking love this. I'm going to goad the shit out of you. And then Cordy arrives and is like, Connor, go upstairs. And he does.
Go to your room.
Go to your room. And he's like, Ma, I mean, girlfriend. Leaves. Fucking horrible. Cordy turns off the cameras and it's deal o'clock. She would like everything about the Beast, and in exchange, Angelus gets her. This isn't a good deal. Cordy, I've seen some bad deal making in my life. I really have. I watched The Vampire Diaries. But this is not a good deal.
I mean, I suppose the deal is because, at least in a different world, Cordelia is the heart and soul of this team. Mm-hmm. So to have her, you know, kill her, turn her into a vampire, torture her a bunch, that would really hurt them. Of course, they're all broken inside now, so.
Like, would they even care? They're not friends. Like,
would they even notice?
Oh, hello, stranger. I guess you're a vampire now.
It is funny how, like, tense everything is, but, like, because they were all together, like, all episode. I'm like, this is like them being friends again.
It kind of is, like again, the one moment where they all are like, you don't have to listen to this, Cordy. Like, we can turn it off. Like, this is fucked up. Like, we all know he's lying. Like, that's the one moment where they're kind of friends, is they all unite around Cordy. So it is true. Like, Cordy is,
and also, you know, the one moment where they get the context of what exactly happened with Angel and Cordy, where it's like, oh, she was like, I love you, but no, you're bad. Because, you know, Angel, only, like, only person who knew that was, like, Lorne, so.
Oh, Lorne. In the office, Cordy shows up. She's made the deal. She won't tell them the terms of the deal, which is how you know it's good. And
Connor's sitting in Angel's desk, a little shit.
Oh, so good. Then in the cell, Angelus and Wes are there, and Angelus starts telling the story. It was 1789. He was in Prussia. He was going to Vienna. He knew he was being watched, and he came across the big massacre we saw in Cordy's vision. Turns out this beast had a girl problem. The Savea priestesses were going to banish him, and he needed help. And he went and he asked Angel for some, and he did this whole massacre to impress him and stuff. And Angel refused to help and got fucking clocked. The shot of him getting punched in the face and him spitting blood, I loved. No notes.
It was hilarious.
Sean Astin, thank you. You did a good job here.
It was so good. I mean, first of all, it confirms that Beast really does just want to fuck Angelus.
Yeah.
We talked about it. It's true. And then we get a little hee-hee out of it.
Yeah, it's so cute. So then the Sevea priestesses showed up and they banished the Beast anyway. And
which
there
is
we go.
Cool. And the NyQuil is hitting, baby.
Ooh, hell yeah. Then I'll go quick.
No need to go quick. Everything's slow now.
Then in the office, they're like, they've done the research. The Sevea priests, also known as the Seveyr, are a mystical order. They're all descendants of a powerful Nordic priestess, Sevea. And they're like, how do we find them? How do we find them? Gunn, meanwhile, walks to the back corner and finds them in the yellow pages immediately.
Yeah. He banished himself to the corner because of, like, more weirdness, and then he finds them in the phone book, all caps. But ha-ha, he finds them in the phone book.
That's
See, Fred, love him. He's the best.
Love him. Choose him. Want him. I just, like, or explain to me why you don't. Like, something.
But also, I'm bummed with the priestesses. We never heard them once say sister. That's absurd to me.
That's rude. That's not the priestesses I know.
not the white priestesses I know.
So they go to the Pacoima Sevea headquarters, and no one's there. But the door's open. It's because they all got killed.
It sucks.
Yeah, it's a
whole. It's not just the priestesses. It's like their whole family. So yeah,
kids, grandma.
They even say it's only the women who are the priestesses in the family. But nope, even kids, husband. Yeah,
Everyone got killed, and it's gross and very sad. The Beast is a step ahead of them, but how?
They're like, is he psychic? Is he watching them? Does he have his own surveillance cameras in the hotel?
It turns out it's really easy to set those up, as we learned.
Did he talk to Gavin, RIP's bug guy?
Oh, I hope he did. So they find the banishment incantation, which is cool. Connor, seeing all of these human dead bodies, gets really fucked up and runs away and pukes. Fair enough.
Yeah, it's a combination of seeing the bodies, realizing they've been dead for days and no one noticed, and then seeing, like, Daddy's birthday on the calendar. And he's like, nope, 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 nope.
Which, like, is nice to see. Like, it's nice to see him be, like, affected by
a
something.
Human?
Like, a person, yeah. And Cordy comes outside, and she's like, I get it. Dead demons ooze, dead vampires dust, but dead humans, it's different. And he's like, no, it isn't. I don't even care.
Yeah. Is there someone who does even care, possibly?
I wish we could talk to a resident con head.
I thought you would never ask.
Kristen's Corner. It's all Riley's Ducks and what the fuck, if Cordy is hot. Kristen's Corner is the place for very deep thoughts.
Never did I think that I, Kristen Russo, would be sitting in the resident con head seat. You know, I looked at the chair from afar and laughed and thought, never me. She'll never sit there. But I think that this episode is where I, it's the first episode that I cared about Connor at all. except for when he was a baby.
I loved Connor when he was a baby. Yeah.
Everybody
Connor never
Connor.
Did anything wrong.
Yeah. He's so cute with his tiny hockey stick. Come on.
Yeah.
But I have been listening to what you've been saying, and, like, I think that it is because he just hasn't had his own story ever. And this is, like, the first time that I can remember that you see him be a person. It's like, I've basically just decided in my mind that up until this episode, Connor was just so fucked up that he had no thoughts of his own and just was playing a character. And then finally it's unlocked because he sees, it's like, even the fact that what he's looking at on the fridge is, like, it's kind of stupid. I mean, it's not, but it's like Daddy's birthday with, like, a stupid red heart. It normally would be a thing where you'd be like, oh God, fucking Connor. But he, you know, I think Vincent Kartheiser, like, nails the scene. He's all beat up, which I also think helps, like,
yeah, you feel bad
helps
for
it
him.
Land.
Yeah,
but yeah, I just couldn't agree with both of you more with the lack of depth that this character has gotten, and it was just lovely to see a little bit this time.
Yeah, it's like he's a little boy. He like this stuff affects him, like it hurts him, and like this is him doing his best with it. And that's embarrassing, but this is him doing his best. It really is. He is trying and failing miserably, which, like, I don't know, can be beautifully tragic and great in certain ways, but also in not the way they're doing it. But, like, this had something to it, you know? Like, this had vulnerability. Yeah.
Yeah. Which is nice. I think he pulled away from Cordy, which also felt very powerful because it's been very one note the whole time of like he just like wants to be with Cordy and only with Cordy and he hates his dad and he this and he that. Whereas like the reality,
which we all know what he's talking about. We all want to be with Cordy. We all hate our dad. It's all the truth.
I mean, of course. Yeah.
Sorry, Dad.
Sorry, Dad.
fuck you. But,
hell yeah.
But I just like. I just think that this could have been a part of the story the whole time. That, like, he did, like, he mm-hmm. could want, his deepest desire could be to be with Cordy, and he could still pull away from Cordy sometimes. He could still, and we just never got those notes until, like, this moment. So I was just, like, so excited. I couldn't even believe it. Here I was, caring about Connor.
It's a breath of fresh air.
And so I requested a Conhead corner.
Aww.
Connor. I have a couple of other Connor. Thoughts, if I may.
Please.
Please.
Okay. One of them is, I just don't understand what the plan was with Angelus. Like, clearly it's going horribly. Clearly everything you've said is correct. They should have, like, processed some of their trauma first, blah, blah, blah. But what was the plan? How were they gonna get Angelus to fucking tell them this shit? Like, I mean, I just don't understand. They had no plan.
They were like a step away from a truth serum spell.
They had no leverage.
Nothing.
Like, why would you not? There's nothing you have that he wants other than like freedom to go about and be in the body. Like,
right.
What they should have been doing is like going upstairs and pretending his manipulation worked, and then going
yes!
further upstairs and being like, okay, so we're all best friends. Hell yeah, we are. This is just an act we're putting on. I love you. Mwah. I love you too. Mwah. Like, and
yes!
then going back downstairs and fighting each other so that he thought he was pulling one over on him, but no, he wasn't. Instead, they just give him everything he wants.
I mean, the first scene where Wes goes down and sits down and is like, all right, Angelus, tell me what you know. I'm like, what are we doing, people?
Like,
what? Why?
I'm sorry. I know this isn't this. You know, may be a little controversial. Do a little torture. You think
right?
Angel's gonna care if his body gets tortured? No.
Fucking 1-800 Giles. Call that guy.
But
he'll
also,
come
like,
over.
Angelus wouldn't care because, like, haha, you're torturing Angel. That's what he would do.
Yeah. I don't know. Maybe there's something thinking about the
cut off his dick.
Cut off his dick.
Angelus would care about that.
Oh, he would be so upset. But also, I'm like thinking about, remember after I Only Have Eyes for You, and he's like, oh, I felt love, and it's disgusting. They should
yes!
all just be like, hey, buddy.
We love you so much.
Singing Kumbaya.
Yeah, like, I've got to tell you about one of my favorite days that I spent with Angel. And, like, he's just yeah. bound and gagged and forced to look at photo albums of them all together and happy.
Yes. Yes.
This is the kind of shit that I think
they finally
made.
Have that Thanksgiving dinner Angel was dreaming about.
Like,
oh my
again,
God, yes, they should just pour a glass of milk for Connor, you know?
Just make him watch Connor drink wine out of a milk glass and he'll be like, I'll tell you anything you want to know. Please, God. I'm begging.
Oh God, they should make him wear the clotter ring in the right direction. He's with Buffy still. You know what I mean? Like, there's shit they could have done.
Truly call Buffy. Get Buffy on the phone and just have her be like, hey, cutie. Like, what's up, stud? Yeah. He'll be like, no. She'll be like, remember when I gave you... Oh, no, she doesn't remember when she gave him chocolate and peanut butter at the same time.
Okay.
So she could
That's
not bring
mean,
that up.
Morgan. That's
whoops.
I thought that it was good. I hurt myself. It hurts itself. Oh, no.
Okay, I've taken up more than my corner space. I just want to say one more thing about Wesley.
Please.
Like, earlier, you were like, where do you want to come in for your corner? And I was like, I think Conhead. And then as you were talking, I was like, oh, shit, but there too. Oh, no, but there. I had a lot of feelings. Mm-hmm. You talked about all of the Fred stuff that needs to be fucking talked about. But the other piece of this for me is Wesley, because Wesley, I'm sorry, I've signed off of the fucking Wesley. I can't with him anymore. He's dead to
me. Only when he has two guns in slow motion are we allowed.
Yes. Mm-hmm. He is fucking, no, he's fucking broken the rules too many times in my book. But all that said, at the very least, Wesley is usually very focused on the mission. And so that scene to me was wild for a million reasons. Mm-hmm. And that's another one, is that like Angelus is fucking downstairs. If anyone was going to fucking wait, why would he do this now?
I feel like he reverted to his old self after having Angelus bitch him out, honestly.
And it's also weak? That like one fucking session with this guy makes you do this shit. Like you're supposed to be prepared. You're supposed to like, and I also just don't buy
Wes hasn't gotten any therapy. That's why he's not prepared. He needs therapy.
I know. I'm just like, let me
at him. If he can fucking walk out on Lila like that shit, he could fucking deal with a little bit more emotional manipulation. Get it together, Wesley.
But it's also just like the way that this, I hate to say this. I don't want to say it. I'm unhappy to say it. But, like, I just, like, don't think he gave a shit about Lila at all. And it, like, and they are constantly like, yeah, like, I think the show is constantly shitting on that narrative. And they're like, yeah, he only wants to be with the good girl who has a splash of darkness in her that he, I know he also has a splash of darkness in him. So, like, those darknesses can go kissy, kissy, kissy. And then they can be good guys together and go kissy, kissy, kissy. And I'm just, and he didn't like the bad lady. That wasn't real. That didn't matter. And I'm like, that's honey. Interesting. I am exclusively interested in the Wes that fucked Lila. I am not interested in that little dweeb from before. Like, yes. I want the guy with the throat scar, and I want him to be complicated and also the old vulnerable Wes too. Because the thing is, he is all of it, but not anymore. Like, now he's this other thing that I can't decipher. I feel like I can read none of them anymore because all of them are acting as just like functionaries exclusively. And it makes me mad.
Yes. But before you go, actually.
Oh, yes.
We're going to put a segment within a corner because it's fuckwatch time.
I've never heard of such chaos. A segment inside of a corner. Okay.
We're doing it. We're doing it. We're doing it.
Hit it, bitch.
Fuckwatch.
Feels good, doesn't it?
It does. It feels great.
It's great. Who are you guys fucking?
Kristen, you first.
Okay. I thought I had a pick, but I've changed it. I've added to it. I'm picking two for my fuck watch.
What?
It's unfortunate for me because, okay, I'll take you through my journey, right? I was just going to pick Angelus because come on, guys. But then I was like, oh, shit, but remember how much Beastie and Angelus want to do it? What if I did it with both of them? So I lose a little bit because I get long hair, Irish accent, Angelus. Nobody really,
The wig was looking right.
He looked better than I've seen him look with
since
that
season
wig.
Three of Angel. They like put more money into the wig, actually.
Right? Yeah. So I'm
because
gonna...
his wig in the Holtz flashbacks actually like held up.
I agree. It's not the most egregious wig. I've seen so many worse wigs on the Vampire Diary.
It is interesting because like David Boreanaz is like when he's like on hiatus usually like grows his hair out more and it's like he has a fuller head of hair than the wigs would suggest basically.
Yeah.
It's like a little he's got like a lion's mane going when he grows his hair out and like these wigs don't capture that.
No, but I'm going for the wig and the horns. That's my pick. The wig and the horns. The horns and the wig.
Horns.
You know what?
Yeah.
I'm gonna follow in your footsteps and I'm gonna say flashback wig Angelus right after he gets knocked out. Cause I'd be like, hey baby, what's wrong? And like get that like low-hanging fruit. He'd be like, I got hurt. And I'd be like, oh, I'll fix it.
You're one of the staged wounded people.
Yeah, one
but
of
you,
the
like,
dead bodies, and I
dead.
Like wake up, and I'm like, aww. Well, it seems so hard for you, and I'm nursing back to health.
Yeah, I'm going to go with Angelus, both in the present and the flashback, because I was thinking about it using my future knowledge. Mm. And I'm like, I think this episode, even though, again, he's very crass, he's like the hottest he is in this arc. Mm. So I'm like, I gotta.
Wait, but LaToya, how are you going to fuck past and present?
I have time travel powers in this scenario.
I didn't know if you were going to summon them both to your time and place, or if you were going to, you know what I mean? So, okay.
I'm a mutant in this, time.
So you will fuck them both, not they will both come to you. Understood.
Yes.
Okay, so
you'll fuck them separately from each other. They will not see each other at all in this exchange. Okay, great.
Yes. Okay. And Angel won't remember any of it.
Because he never remembers the good stuff.
Wow. Thank you so much for putting your segment in my corner. Should I play both jingles out?
Of course, yeah. You gotta do a fuck watch jingle and then, Christmas quarter.
Perfect.
Fuck watch.
So then this scene ends. There's a big vamp fight because there's vampires fucking everywhere. And they hop in the car and Wes hits one with his car. It rules. They drive back to L.A. from Pacoima. In the lobby, we can see Angelus is singing on the old camera. Lauren says, "You don't want to know what he can read." Yikes.
Hot.
Actually, hell yeah. Lauren calls Gunn moon pie in this moment, and I needed that. I needed that, and he needed that. And I was glad that at least Lauren was here to provide that kind of love and affection. I'm not doing well.
I've noticed.
Yeah, Wes and Connor and Cordy come back. They're like, it's time to bring back Angel. Like, the Cevallas are dead. Like, we're fucked.
They need Wu Pang.
Yeah, we need Wu Pang in the cell. Like, they're like, the priestess is dead. The world is not saved. It's not looking good with Cordy and Angel. And then they go to the safe. And I'm like, cool. I can't wait for the soul to be inside and everything to be fine. And then in the cell, Angel's like, won't be here forever, you know? And Cordelia's like, well, we're putting your soul back in. Like, it doesn't matter. And she says to Angelus that he's nobody and he's just a disease, which is like pretty mean. But the joke's on her because the soul's not in the safe. They're fucked.
Whoops. These doofuses just looking at the safe as though like the soul will come back if they keep staring at it.
Like, guys, no. It's gone.
Fred saying, Angel's soul, .. It's gone. I'm like, that's going to be in the previous lease for a bit, baby.
Yeah, so yeah, it looks like we're stuck with Angelus for the immediate future, which I'm down with and into, but I just, everybody else has got to get their shit together. Like, that they thought they were strong enough to all do psychological warfare with Angel, with Angelus, like, that's not, you can't.
Well, I mean, you know, you guys were saying, you and Chris were saying, you know, call Giles. It's like, Giles is stupid. He's not touching people over on Buffy. Mm.
Oh, yeah. He's over there not touching anybody.
Mm-mm. Yeah. I wonder what that's about.
Yeah, what does that mean? Who actually would be the most helpful to have? Would it be Giles? Or I'm trying to think. Like,
yes.
Yeah, it's Giles because he actually, like, has chill. He contains chill. But you know he'd be like, oh, how is your ex Jenny Calendar doing? Oh, wait. I super murdered her. You remember that?
Giles is like, I actually did go to therapy in England.
Yeah, Giles is like, yeah, guess what? Dealt with it. Have had
Universal
several
healthcare.
Beautiful girlfriends since.
Remember Olivia?
Yeah. She was hot.
Right?
That girl's beautiful.
But she couldn't stay because she was
nope,
black.
Not allowed.
They could also make Dark Willow come back. She might be able to deal with Angelus.
Yeah, but then
I
you
think
deal
that
with her.
Angelus would laugh at her shit.
He'd be like, remember when I killed your fish and then her hair would turn red and she'd be sobbing? She'd be like, stop it.
It would be like on Legacies when Finch makes fun of Dark Josie. It would be like...
To be fair, Dark Willow is much scarier than Dark Josie.
Yes, Dark Willow fucked me up.
Dark Willow fucked me up. She is not a Hot Topic supervillain.
I think Angelus would make a lot of upsetting lesbian jokes.
Yeah, I think he'd say a lot of homophobic shit that I don't want to hear. But then I think that all... But then it's just like eat a woman out in front of him and like show him that you could actually make a woman come, which I don't know if Angelus can do.
Ask Darla and Drusilla. He can.
Yeah, but I just think, you know, he might be intimidated by this show of power. I think it's the only thing you actually could do.
I really didn't see it taking this turn. I really didn't see your weapon against Angelus being a woman going down on another woman. Incredible. Absolutely impeccable work. Number one podcast.
This is the number one weapon I can think of, is to allowing two girls to kiss. Good God. Yeah, it's not looking good for them. We definitely need Wu Pang back. And we need to find that soul. So, and they're all mad at each other. Like, who's even gonna lead this? Ugh.
You gotta pay the troll toll.
Get into that boy's soul. You want this gotta baby pay boy's the troll soul. You gotta pay the troll toll. Troll toll. What you say? Troll toll.
Hey.
Troll toll. Danny DeVito, come on the pod. It's.
Kristen, you know about that?
You know about the troll toll?
You know about the troll toll?
You ever pay the troll toll, Kristen?
I don't know. It sounds like kind of familiar, but I don't know why. What does Danny DeVito sing it in?
It's Always Sunny. It's from the It's Always Sunny musical, The Nightman Coming.
Oh, maybe I've just heard you sing it before.
Probably.
I've never seen that television show.
It's a gift.
You would enjoy it. It's chaos. It's pure chaos.
Absolute chaos. And it's become so beautifully gay, and I really love that about it most of all.
It's still on right now.
Mm-hmm. Longest running comedy, like cable comedy ever.
I remember it from
live action comedy. Yeah,
live action. Wow. They're fucking legends. I saw something. It was like, we're the longest running comedy. Like, you fucking psychos. Like Rob McElhenney tweeted. I'm like, yeah, you're right. We are fucking psychos, but I love it.
All right, I'll watch it.
Yay.
Yes.
God, we've done it. Okay, so at least I know this has been a grim episode, but listen, we got that victory. Kristen's going to watch It's Always Sunny. So if nothing else, hold that with you. If anyone else is looking for some other kind of cold comfort, would you recommend maybe an episode of the old WB for them?
Possibly. Hit it, bitch.
Woo!
Angel is a vampire. Does he even like TV?
I think he'll like the WB.
They get that hot teen drama to ease the pain and trauma. And here's the episode that he needs to see.
Okay. So obviously, I mean, it's pretty obvious what I'm going to choose. It's not even going to be an episode. It's going to be the epilogue to an episode, because we talked about Oedipus and we talked about talking about Oedipus at Buffy Prom. It's going to be the epilogue to The Puppet Show, season 1, episode 9 of Buffy the Vampire Slayer. Duh.
Yes.
Make fucking Connor watch this, because Angel's left the building. Watch this until he gets it through his thick fucking skull. His thick bob-headed skull. His thick bowl-cut headed skull.
Cindy, this is just bones.
It's bones!
Yes, 100%. I love it. I think everybody could stand to watch some high school drama and to learn some things about themselves.
I also just wanted to say, because I was thinking about this earlier, I think people are always like, why is LaToya not part of, like, the Empire Diaries book club things? Mm-hmm. It's because I don't read a lot of, like, fiction now in general, mm-hmm. like, mostly just nonfiction, but I also, like, I've, like, read, like, a lot of the classics.
Yeah.
Like Oedipus Rex, like, a lot of Shakespeare, so, like, that's my shit.
Yeah, when we do The Bard, then we'll call you, baby.
Yes. And Joe be like, I don't want to be part of this.
And by that, I mean Kenneth Branagh's autobiography.
Yes.
We actually should do a live Shakespeare thing. That would be really fun for us.
That would. Yeah. But also a live Shakespeare thing, but really we're just doing Wild Wild West.
Yes. If you're trying to get me to rap all of Wild Wild West on mic, I will do it.
Do it now. Go. No.
I'm not gonna. I'm saving it. Boo. I'm saving it for the right time. But you can ask Michael Chasen. He's seen me do it several times. Sometimes when it comes up on shuffle, Michael's like, Morgan, can you skip it? I can't hear it again. And I'm like, wow, all right.
You slap
loser. It's my national anthem, but okay. So much better than Men in Black. As a rap, not as a film.
Oh my god, I had like a panic attack.
No. I'm smart. I got a good head on my shoulders.
As a rap and as a movie.
And as a film. Duh. Anyways, this has been Angel on Top. You can follow us on socials at Angel on Top Cast on Twitter or on Instagram. You can go to angelontop.com to be taken to our Patreon where you can support us, which is really great and super helpful to do. And might be something brewing in that space that we'll be able to announce shortly. If you'd like to follow me on social media, that's so nice of you. You can do it at Lorgan Mudich on any platform. LaToya, where can the people find you, and should they, and where can they find your writing?
I'm not around on social media these days.
Hell yeah.
But you can find my writing, I don't know, search my name, do things, writing for usually The Wrap and Variety right now, so.
Yeah, hell yeah. And that is us, and without much...
This is us.
And without any...
To quote Mandy Moore... Did she ever say that in the show?
She should. She should say that in the last episode, and it should fade. It should do a circle zoom on her face.
This is us. And also, life itself is the most unreliable narrator.
The most unreliable narrator is life itself. Hit by a bus. And on that note, you're now checking out of the Hyperion. Ding ding.
Hey there, this is Justin Bartha. I made a funny new podcast, King of the Egg Cream. It has the greatest cast in the history of podcasts with actors like Louis Black.
I'm torn by my feelings for two women.
Bobby Cannavale.
You can eat it, or if someone hits you, you can put it on your cut.
Melanie Lynskey.
I wonder what these marvelous things are that look just like boiled chicken feet.
Jason Ritter.
I can break things and pick locks and kill people.
Michael Stuhlbarg.
The whole point is to inspire people that they should make themselves better.
Ari Grainer.
No, don't whet its appetite. What are you, an idiot?
Me, Justin Bartha.
That's not just any egg cream, that's a Lemke's special.
And all narrated by the hilarious Richard Kind.
This is the story of Harry Dalowitz. And how he rose from nothing to become New York's King of the Egg Cream.
So if you like funny true stories, come listen to King of the Egg Cream, available wherever you get your podcasts.